Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 2. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles, McLennan. We got a big hour. Brad Lidge will join us in about a half an hour. Get his take on the Jays rotation going into the season. You say Kikuchi, revenge season beginning.
Stop
after a hot
it
spring.
Revenge season. Like, that's just setting it up to be worse if he fails miserably, okay?
Possibly. Yeah. But that's on him to make sure that doesn't happen. He had a .87 ERA in the spring, 31 strikeouts. He's looking good. He's got tight pants. He's got a beard. Everything's coming up Kikuchi right now. So until it does implode, might as well be positive about it. I'm trying to be a positive guy here. You're putting a negative spin on it.
But is that
disappointing?
Being positive, calling
revenge season?
Revenge season.
Who's he getting revenge on? Himself?
Absolutely. His former self, you know, people doubting the contract, people suggesting, like myself, that the guy should have bypassed AAA and went to AA. Like, this guy was a disaster last year. Kikuchi was a mess. So, yeah, he's seeking revenge on a lot of different people. So, yeah, we got Brad Lidge coming up. We'll have Marcellus in about 10 minutes. The Bruins have a chance to clinch the President's Trophy tonight, which is amazing.
That's insane.
It's incredible. If they do that tonight, I think JP was saying that'll be the third fastest in NHL history. And they have 119 points through 73 games. They are 16 points up on second-place Carolina in terms of the overall league. Last night, McDavid actually had a down night for him against a team like Arizona. He only picked up a point. But he hit 140 on the season. So he has 140 points. That's the first time we've seen that in the NHL since the 96 season. And I'm curious how you guys would answer this. Which has been more of an impressive lapping of the field? Is it McDavid with the points and the statistics, or is it Boston with the team play?
Oh, that's a great question.
I think it's Boston, to be honest with you. Yeah. I think McDavid has just obviously been this wonder human since he put skates on. For the Boston Bruins to come off the top turnbuckle on the league like they've done, it's incredible. This was supposed to be like, can we bring Krejci back? Can we bring Bergeron back? Can we kind of catch lightning in the bottle and maybe sneak into the playoffs and do some damage? Like, that, you kind of got to think that that was the realistic approach, wasn't it?
Well, wasn't it, guys? They put out that statement, and quite like early on, wasn't it an off-season going, Marchand surgery, McAvoy surgery, we had no idea. Bergeron was still deciding whether he was going to play hockey or not. Krejci was an afterthought. He'd gone home to the Czech Republic. We didn't really know if he was coming back. Several times in our show, everybody else in the league was like, here it is. There's the turning over of Boston. Mm-hmm. You know, Pasternak hadn't signed a deal yet. He was kind of, you know, what's going on with Pasternak? You might have to trade him because all the talk, you know, Goudreau, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, you're like, okay, what's going to happen with Pasta a year from now? Like, that was the narrative. And all
they
of a sudden,
even had Noodles, that dumb signing early in the season that could have derailed things as well.
Which one?
The kid they attempted to sign.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember his name.
Oh, yes, the kid that was drafted by Arizona originally.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
yes.
I'm drawing a blank on Murray.
Who cares? It doesn't matter. But that could have derailed things because Patrice Bergeron had to come out and say, we don't agree with it. And who knows where things could have gone from there, but it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, as impressive as McDavid is, Hayes, you've been calling for this for 2 years. You're like, this guy's going to go off. But we didn't see, and I personally didn't see Boston, like kind of all the pieces falling together, kind of a perfect storm type of thing.
Well, it honestly can be a John Ferguson Jr. situation. You can sit in the middle on this because not only is McDavid lapping the field in terms of total points, he's lapping the field in terms of goals as well. He's going to win the Rocket and the Art Ross. That is incredibly difficult to do, to have more goals than anyone else by a substantial margin. But also, he's got 140 points. Drysdale's got 114. He's 26 points up on the second place guy. And Drysdale's got a massive gap on the third place guy.
So it's disgusting.
They're actually a carbon. Yeah. They're almost mirroring each other in terms of their impressiveness. I do think it's more expected out of McDavid, which speaks to what he's been building towards, what he's been doing since he got into the league. So I think in a way that's almost unfair to him, because I think you can make the sound case that it actually is McDavid, because he's doing it on himself, by himself. He's doing something we haven't seen since 96. He's putting up, he's going to maybe score 66, 67 goals. He's going to blow past 150 points, I think, which is just absurd. But this is probably the mic drop on why it's Boston. The expectations were not there. Just based on their history. Not that they've been a terrible team. They've been a playoff team every year. They've been a borderline cup-contending team consistently for the better part of 12, 13 years. But for them to completely flip the script, the second-place team in the league based on points is Carolina. Carolina has 9 losses at home this season. 9. That's the second-place team in the league. They have 9 losses at home. Boston has 8 losses on the road. So, like, Boston has less losses on the road than the second-place team has in their home building.
That's crazy.
It's remarkable. And I think adding the Pastrnak signing to it actually is a cherry on top, because that's not hanging over them. He locked in. He's going to be there for the next 8 years. Jim Montgomery comes in.
Your boy.
Monty comes in. That's our guy, right? Yeah. And listen, Bruce Cassidy had a really good run. And look what he's doing in Vegas. He has not missed a step in Vegas, man. He's had an outstanding season down there. You bring in Montgomery, not a household name. You know, a guy who, you know, when he left his last job, it was kind of like, I don't know if we're going to see him again.
Well, I had problems. Like, it's well documented. He's had problems.
He, like, you talk about a first impression behind the bench. Now, he has been very open and honest about how he leans on Bergeron, Krejci, Marchand, McAvoy. Like, they've got a veteran leadership in that group that polices everything. Foligno's a big part of that in terms of being a voice and making sure that they can consistently show up. But right. Montgomery's done an outstanding job, and I do think
even
it's
the
Boston.
Coaching, Hayes, even the coaching, like, to go out and not a lot of people. There was probably some people that said, we're not touching Jimmy Montgomery because we're not taking a chance with what happened in the past, and we just don't want anything to happen. But the Bruins did their work, and they talked. They took a chance, and they said, we're going to give this guy a shot to be on a real quality team, and it's just a fascinating story. It's an unreal story.
Here's where the answer can change, though, in 2 months. It immediately reverts back to McDavid if Boston loses in the first round. You know, even I would say if they lose in the second round, it becomes a season that will be remembered as it should be, well documented, but you have to close if you're this much of a powerhouse. Yeah. Right. If you're lapping the field, you have to win the Stanley Cup for it to be complete.
I was curious to who was the 1 and 2 to clinch the President's Trophy.
I'm sure it was those Habs teams in the 70s. I don't have access to
maybe
that.
Maybe one of those Wings teams in the 90s.
You're talking pillar to post, like start the season, dominate. And
no, I'm just saying clinching the President's
Trophy. Quickest to winning the President's Trophy. Yeah, I'm sure it was that. Those late 70s Habs teams, didn't they win 5 in a row, though, before the Islanders took off? Like, they won every year. Not only were they the most dominant team, they won every single year. And I think that's really, you talk about pressure that's there for the Bruins. I think the pressure of history is now hanging over them, where they have to close. Like the 73 Warriors, they lost in the final that year. It left it incomplete. They win 73 wins. They end up with 73 wins. That sets a new bar in the NBA. They lost to LeBron and the Cavs, right?
Right.
That immediately had a lot of people saying, well, the 72-win Bulls, they're better, because they didn't lose in the final. They closed. And Boston's kind of in that category. Like, if you're going to lap the field, you've got to close now. Yeah. And, you know, McDavid's different in this conversation because it's an individual. And, like, it is amazing. The fact that McDavid is doing this and the conversation is still leading back to Boston really speaks to the season that they've had.
Well, they have. And you're right. Like, they've got to finish it off. So the 72 Bulls, or the 72-win Bulls, finished it off. The 73-win Warriors lost in the finals. So you're right. They become an asterisk. They're like, hey, great regular season, but couldn't get it done. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of pressure on the Boston Bruins, because you have a season like this. Like, you're expected, like, we talked about it, was that 2 weeks ago, Hayes, where you're like, you know, Bruins or the field. And everyone's like, well, you kind of take the field because you got a chance for a team to get hot, all these other things. There's a lot of people. And I was thinking about it in the break. Okay, so we were talking with Johnny, him going, odds 52-48. It's always these coin flip situations, and it might be with the Bruins. What if it wasn't the Bruins? Like, what would we be saying if that was the Leafs lapping the field? But like,
apply their history to the playoffs. Is that what you're asking? Like,
well, no, I
how
would
confident
say, like,
you'd
the
be?
The expectation, if yes. you've got a team that just literally doesn't lose, like, I can't remember, like, Boston lost their last game. I'm trying to remember when it was. It seems like they just never lose.
They never lose.
But
yeah.
But the expectation for this group has to be in Boston.
Oh, it's cup or bust. Absolutely.
Cup or bust.
It's cup or bust all day. They have a 118 goal differential. 118.
It's disgusting.
The Leafs have a plus 48, and the Leafs are a great team. The Leafs have clinched the playoffs as well. And the Leafs are, what are they, 70? They're 70 goals behind them in the goal differential category.
Crazy.
That's, you know, what Boston's done. So clearly it is cup or bust, you know, and you can apply that to a number of teams in terms of what they want and what their fans may expect. But in terms of history,
this is legit.
It's absolutely cup or bust. There's a lot going on in the NFL. Obviously, the Lamar Jackson stuff is quite intriguing because we've been talking about whether or not he needs an agent. We flashed the numbers on Josh Allen and how much money he's already made in his career, and they were both drafted in the first round of the same draft. And to chat about that, among many other things around the NFL and the sports world for that matter, we're joined now by longtime NFLer, host of the More To It podcast. Here's our buddy Marcellus Wiley. Marcellus, I'm assuming you had an agent representing you throughout your career. Where do you stand on this conversation with Lamar and the idea that maybe he's getting played here not only by the Ravens but by the field because he does not have a rep?
Well, I did have a representative all 10 years of my NFL career, and before I get into that, I will state it all by prefacing by saying you don't need an agent, but it's certainly nice to have one. They do all the dirty work for you. They become the bad cop in a good cop, bad cop negotiation, as most of them are. Now, Lamar knows intimately that he doesn't need an agent because his teammate, linebacker Roquan Smith, signed a 5-year, $100 million deal with little to no noise about it. But he's representing himself in that deal as well and got paid. There's a Richard Sherman out there who got paid when he was representing himself. Bobby Wagner's gotten paid several times.
Uh-oh.
Are we on the air?
Yeah.
Yeah,
play the Coley Acovo drop. It's been, you know, we're well into the show. We haven't played Carlo from yesterday.
I know. How many times did that play on the morning show this morning? Like, that had to have been a 20-pack, easily.
Easily. I know Krolnick was goofing about it online, Twitter, Instagram, everything. Oh. But we'll see if we can get Marcellus back. And interesting, like, he's referencing these other players, and when we get him back, I'll ask him. Right. We haven't heard him mention a quarterback yet. Do we have Marcellus? Let me go there, Marcellus, because you're mentioning Roquan Smith, Richard Sherman. I haven't heard a superstar quarterback who's got an MVP yet referenced in terms of someone not having representation.
Yeah, you won't, because you won't also hear but one quarterback basically in the modern era of free agency that was a franchise-level quarterback that was available under the age of 30, and that was even questionable. His name was Kirk Cousins. No one has a franchise quarterback that even flirts with free agency or gets dangled out there in a non-exclusive franchise tag. But Lamar, I think, needed an agent because he has some variables that he certainly has now found himself losing to. One is you came into the league and people doubted you. So those doubt birds, even if they fly lower or fly higher, they're still flying. People question his style of play. People always say that he's one play away from getting hurt, even though guys in the pocket get hurt more than the guys who run. All of those things are variables you need to negotiate before you even get to the dollar amount. And I don't know if Lamar Jackson really understood how sophisticated a negotiation this was going to be. It's not a conventional quarterback. It's not a traditional quarterback. And his greater years were a couple of years ago, if not farther away than his most recent years, right? He's missed 5 games the last 2 years consecutively. And all those things add up to a person who needs to navigate around those landmines and do it in a way where you still keep your image clean. Right now, Lamar Jackson is being the good cop and the bad cop for the media, for public consumption, and that's why people are now starting to look at this situation like it's a dire negotiation. He has to now come out 25 days later and say he asked for a trade March 2nd. All these things are supposed to be done by the agent who we expect to play that role. But right now, the same guy who led the league in passing touchdowns, won a unanimous MVP, is also the same guy who's going out there and representing himself in not such a favorable way. And that's where he's losing right now, in the court of public opinion and perception, because you're not supposed to play both roles.
Marcellus, desperation makes sports franchises do some goofy things. You saw the scenario last year with Deshaun Watson sitting there, and Cleveland said, we just got to move heaven and earth to get this guy. And they made the transaction happen. Why hasn't anybody swept in and said, we just got to pull the trigger on this? Is there something out there that teams know that no one else is privy to about Lamar Jackson?
It starts with the fact that he's even available. Like, that makes you question it, right? That before you even purchase it, it gives you, like, sticker shock or buyer's remorse. Like, wait a minute, you're apprehensive. Like, really? It's too good to be true. All right, so that's part one. So then you realize, or at least you assume, that it's probably not that good if they're even going to make it available. Now, what's available? A guy who's been hurt the last 2 years, a guy who is going to cost north of $200 million guaranteed, a guy who also is going to come in with a questionable style of play. His best ball is years away in terms of what we've seen. And then most importantly, you add all of that up and you're still talking about giving up two first-round draft picks on top of all of that. That's when you realize we're not going to do the dirty work for the Ravens, because all they could do is match it. So we set a market value for him and you matched it. What was all that for in terms of us and our organization? Or we actually get Lamar Jackson. Yay! We're committing $200-some million to get Lamar Jackson, who was available from the Ravens, who haven't won a Super Bowl with Lamar Jackson. And, oh, by the way, we got to give up two first-round picks. It's just a hefty price tag for an amazing car, but as you check the records, it's been in an accident or two. And you're saying, maybe we just wait to get our own car, or certainly something that's a little less pricey.
So, speaking of knowing players, we've been playing this Andy Reid clip many times today. I don't know if you've heard it, Marcellus, but I figure we should play it again now that we're into hour three of our show. This is Andy Reid at the owners' meetings. All the coaches are down there. There's a media scrum. And someone, I'm assuming from Green Bay, is asking Andy Reid to break down what he remembers from the game when Jordan Love was playing at Arrowhead.
What did you think of Jordan Love in that quarter, one by up in the game that he played against you, what was that, 2 years ago?
Who's that?
Jordan Love.
Trying to remember Jordan Love.
Packers, he started that game when Rodgers missed it because of COVID.
Oh, yes, absolutely, yeah. No, I thought he was good.
He doesn't remember a thing about Jordan Love, man. What does that say about either Jordan Love and his reputation throughout the league, or about coaches in the NFL using Andy Reid as an example? Like, are these guys actually that, like, focused solely on their own team? Like, how could Andy Reid not
know? He has to know the quarterback.
Exactly. Yeah. How could he not know who Jordan Love is?
Oh, man, I'm Team Andy on this one. And it's funny because I've told this story so many different times to friends. The way we consume film study is in a dark room with no audio, and you get the two different film versions. You get the all type, which you can see the field, and then you get the sideline view, right? And we don't get the depth chart. We don't get the roster name. So literally, there are times when you're watching the film and all you say is their number. You're like, number 12 is good. Number 38, all right, watch for him. Ooh, 76, you can attack him. And you never check to see who that guy is. Now when you become a name, when you become a star, when you become a starter, yeah, we know who you are typically. But Jordan Love inserted in what, one game, few games? Like, no, you probably don't know who he is, literally. And it's funny because people think we're sitting there watching the game like you watch the game. You watch the game with Joe Buck and Troy Aikman and saying, oh, Denzel Fourier for the run. And you're like, oh, I know who Denzel Fourier is. And then you come to me. I'm like, who, number 26? And that's all I know. I don't know who Denzel Fourier is. So that's how disconnected it is from being a player and watching a film and a fan. Now, exponentially greater than a player in that perspective is a coach who is consumed with film and watches nothing but film and is never going to check. He cares about how he moves. He cares about what plays he's running. And he doesn't care about his name on his birth certificate. So, yeah, I actually have seen it 1,000 times, man. I'm Team Andy on this.
Mm-hmm. So what have you seen 1,000 times a player ghosting management? And I'm talking about Aaron Rodgers not responding even to Green Bay, anything whatsoever. I mean, what do you make of all of this?
Oh, man, I use a dating example. You're only busy when you don't want to hang out with that lady. You're only busy when it's not the one that you want to call you. But it's when it's the one you want, oh, you're always readily available. You're always interested. You're always accessible. So this is as simple as there's an uneven level of interest. Either Green Bay wants Aaron more or less than he wants them, or vice versa. Basically, Aaron Rodgers is like, look, I'm not that interested in this situation, so therefore my actions follow my thoughts. And Green Bay tried and obviously tried to be professional, but realized that, hey, guy doesn't seem too interested. How many times have you sent someone a voicemail just because, hey, I'm either busy doing what I want to do or I don't really want to talk to you? I know I'm guilty of that. So I think that the Aaron Rodgers in this situation is the same. He got his money, he got his extension, and he's like, dude, I get to y'all when I get to y'all because there are more interesting things out there, like the New York Jets. It's just sad that he can't be direct. Like, they both should be direct. We don't like each other that much, but we're stuck in this relationship. How can we get out? They could have avoided all of this, but instead they're playing this, like, childlike game of, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know you called. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see your text. Like, who hasn't been there? It's always the same answer. I don't really care that much about you. That's why I didn't pick up.
Yep, that's
you never pulled those stunts, Marcellus, did you?
I'm about to pull it as soon as we get off the phone. I'm sure it's going to ring, and I'm sure I'm going to send him a voicemail. Oh, man, yeah, but I never did it with my organization. No, man, I never did it with the organization. Too much money's at stake. Hey, you got to be professional, et cetera. But, I mean, we all know that Aaron Rodgers struggles to keep his feet on the ground in terms of what he thinks of himself in this situation. And this is exactly what Brett Favre went through. Like, they just get a little too high on their horse, and they just don't want to handle things amicably and professionally. So it is what it is, and I think that's why Green Bay is ready to turn the page. It's just the labor expense of dealing with Aaron Rodgers, not worth how great he is on the field.
Well, you know what's amazing about the finances in the NFL is if you're calling up Dan Snyder and saying you're willing to pay $5 billion for his team, he's sending you to voicemail right now. For $5 billion, you're getting voicemail from Dan Snyder because it's $6 billion or bust. And as a guy that was a part of this league, a guy that laid brick to build this league, what do you make of that, man? There's a team in the NFL that's going to be sold for $6 billion.
Yeah, it's unreal, man. And I congratulate the game. I feel like I wish that my birth certificate said different numbers. I wish it was 20 years later than it was. But at the same time, you just got to feel like, wow, I'm a part of something that's so amazing that's still growing. And I frankly, when I see these guys, I was just on the phone with my financial advisor who still represents active clients. And him and I laugh about it. He's like, dude, do you understand? The money you would have made by putting up the numbers you did at that time now. And I'm like, yeah, I do, actually. It'll be 4 or 5X. And we laugh because you can see guys get paid that, you know. I saw Joey Bosa. I think we had the same amount of sacks. Maybe he had one more than I did. I got $40 million. He got $120 million. And it's like the same number of sacks at the same time when you strike your deal. That's just the way the game goes. So I'm proud of the the ripple effect, or at least the waves I was able to create, because now those waves have turned into a tsunami.
Yeah, no question about that. He is Marcellus Wiley. Check out the More To It podcast. And we always appreciate you taking time for us, buddy. We'll do it again down the road.
All right. Don't ghost me, brothers. I'll talk to you soon.
Never. There's Marcellus Wiley. He's right, though. He's right. If it's someone you really want to hear from, you're going to answer that phone.
Yep.
You know, if it's someone you're not that interested in hearing from, that's a flush.
It's just disrespectful, though.
Like, it really, really is.
Just like, you could understand, this guy has been there, what did you say, 18 years,
Aaron Rodgers.
Guys, I will say one thing. There could have been something behind the scenes that nobody's aware of.
That
was
fair.
A greasy, who knows? Like, yeah. I'm not claiming the guy's an angel, because clearly he's not, and he's got a different way of doing business. But there might have been something greasy coming his way, too, that nobody knows about. So don't count that out.
He did say he came out of the hobbit hole, right, and he realized the Packers, he claims, had changed their mood. So maybe, you know, when he saw a text saying, call me, we need to chat, he's like, all right, I know what's coming up, so I'm going to break up with you before you break up with me. Like, classic passive-aggressive play.
Yeah, don't kid yourself.
But I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah, there could have been some greasy stuff going on going his direction.
Yeah. Hey, listen, they've drafted Jordan Love. According to him, that was a greasy play, right?
That was the beginning of it all.
Absolutely,
it really was.
Baseball season starting on Thursday. The Jays are in St. Louis. Alek Manoah will get the ball in St. Louis opening day. Catch up with Brad Lidge, get his take on the Jays rotation. Kevin Kiermaier is saying that this team could have 100 wins in them. That more coming up with Brad. We'll do that next. All right, the Jays have wrapped up their spring. They're on their way to St. Louis. It is go time on Thursday. Alek Manoah will get the ball, and we know Gosman's going to be a big part of this rotation. Bassett's here for a few years. Barrios is here for a long time. And Yusei Kikuchi. My guy, Yusei Kikuchi, the fifth starter.
So they would go to Toronto first, wouldn't they, and kind of load up and get home?
No.
And like,
I think they're hitting the road. I think they're Dunedin right to St. Louis and go time, man.
Really?
Yeah, they're on the. They got a big roadie
Dude,
to start
that's
the year.
Weird. I don't care. That's weird.
That's baseball for you. You're down in Dunedin for basically 2 months, if not the whole offseason anyway. You got half your stuff is down there before you even get to Toronto. To chat about it, we're joined now by longtime MLB closer, MLB Network radio host. He's been on the show many times. Always great to have him here. Is Brad Lidge. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
We're doing well, man. Baseball is in the air. It's right around the corner. It's go time on Thursday. We can't wait for it. And as a player yourself who went to spring training many, many times, how much of a relief is it to just get it over with? You're healthy. You feel good. You get on the bird back home. What's that vibe like?
Yeah, well, you're right. You do want to get it over with. If you're healthy, if you've already made a team, especially, and, you know, you've already hit those checkpoints in spring training where, you know, as a reliever, you've already thrown your back-to-back days, you've already done your inning-plus outing, and, you know, you've got, you know, your 10 outings under your belt, whatever it is, and you feel like you're just about 100% or you are 100% and there's still a few more days, yeah, at this point, you just want to get the season started. The adrenaline levels tick up every single day as you get closer and closer to opening day. And, you know, I mean, look, there's still a few starting pitchers that probably are happy to get one more outing under their belt, build up the arm strength, build up the pitch count. But by and large, guys that are already on a team, or already know they're going to be on the team, are really just counting down the days, and they can't wait to get to their home city or wherever they're going and get the party started.
Brad, what do you think of the Blue Jays reshaping of their roster? I know they wanted to address some areas. It's a different-looking Jays team. What do you make about the whole package and their chances in the AL East?
Yeah, I like them a lot. You know, I think the rotation, you know, really, if I'm going to be honest, I still think it hinges, you know, Kikuchi being healthy would be great, Ryu, but at the same time, I still think it hinges on Barrios being, you know, the guy that people believe he can be. And if he does that, then the top of the rotation, if he, you know, asserts himself as a top of the rotation guy, really is as good as, you know, just about anybody. I mean, maybe the Yankees have one of the better rotations if they're all healthy, if Carlos Rodon is healthy in baseball. But I do think the Blue Jays have the potential to be right up there with them. So, yeah, I love the rotation. I think they've made some necessary tweaks, maybe offensively, and, you know, we assume that the Bichette gets off to a you know, much better start than he did last year. Obviously, we saw what he did in September. We anticipate that would, you know, be the majority of the year for him this year. So offensively, they're still going to be great. We know they can hit. The rotation, again, with Berríos. But I really think the bullpen is a lot better this year. I think a guy like Chad Green coming over, I mean, he is probably one of the more underrated relievers in baseball over the last 5 years, 6 years. And the games he's pitched in for the Yankees, when he's been 100%, he is honestly as good as anybody out there in the pen. So I think, you know, the other additions they made are fantastic. I think they're going to be a really tough team to beat. I mean, I don't want to say they're going to win the division, but I think they're, you know, absolutely going to win 90 games. Keep in mind, you know, this is the year where teams play out of division a lot more. And I think if the Blue Jays are playing, you know, weaker AL Central, the AL West isn't bad, but, you know, I think they're going to win 90 games. I think they're going to very comfortably go into the, you know, wild card scenario. I still think the Yanks are going to win the division, but I think the Blue Jays are going to be, you know, passing the Rays and, yeah, somewhere around 90 wins.
You mentioned two of our favorite guys on this show, Berríos and Kikuchi. What is the likelihood of both of them rebounding? Because, quite honestly, they were both terrible last year. And from an organizational standpoint, what would be reasonable or should be expected as far as a response from both of those guys coming into the season?
Well, I think, you know, with Gausman and Manoa at the top, I mean, all you're really hoping is that they can both pitch like middle of the rotation starters or better, obviously, is, you know, is the upside. But if they can just be, you know, number three type of guys in a rotation, and by all means they should be, then I think the Jays are going to have a ton of success. Berríos' stuff is just, I mean, frankly, both of their stuff is just too good to not be more effective. And I know they both had ugly years last year. It always surprises me when Berríos is kind of, you know, has one of those starts where he comes out in the first inning and the stuff's just electric, and then somehow he gets at second or third time through, they just get to him. But I think that as he becomes a better pitcher, he'll be able to navigate that more. And I'm guessing that last year is going to go a long ways in kind of teaching him how to pitch a little bit more instead of just trying to, you know, blow it past guys, even though he's kind of becoming that a little bit. I think last year may end up helping him in the long run of his career. And Kikuchi obviously has been very streaky, but the upside's there. The fastball is there. He just loses command, and, you know, for some reason I think he loses confidence when that happens. So, for me, it's a rotation that probably does hinge on those two guys. But, you know, with Gausman and Manoa, you know what you're going to get. But those guys have the clear upside. So I think you just anticipate that they can pitch like middle of the rotation guys, and both of them have the ability to do a lot better than that.
With Brad Lidge, the Jays season beginning on Thursday in St. Louis, and you were home. I mean, there was some tension there in New York come August and into September. Tampa is consistently a team lurking, but then you got Baltimore and Boston at the bottom of the division last year, and two teams in very different positions. Baltimore has been a bottom feeder for years, really since the 16 season. They bottomed out, and they have not been close. They took a big turn last year. They finished with 83 wins. They've got a ton of young talent. They've been trying to improve their pitching for years. And the Sox, like, they're still paying guys. You know, Devers got his deal. They are the Boston Red Sox, one of the three or four most public brands in baseball. But of those two, Baltimore and Boston in particular, who do you have more faith in making noise in the AL East this year?
Definitely Boston. And you know, with all due respect to Baltimore and the season they had last year, they went out and basically did nothing this winter. And that was really, I think, surprising for Baltimore fans and disappointing for fans of the game, period. You know, here they are, and they do pretty well revenue-wise. And I know they're trying to reboot things, and they're not trying to bring any big-time guys that might block some of their younger players. But they could have done a lot better. You know, I like Kyle Gibson a lot, but he's going to be their opening day starter. And I think they really have left a lot out there. They could have gotten out there and definitely added a few pieces and made themselves a lot better. Instead, I would fully anticipate they take a step backwards this year, that they would lose more games than they did last year. And that's tough to see if you're a Baltimore fan. Obviously, the future of the team is incredible. They have some of the best young players in the game on that squad, and they will be good. But they did not compliment those guys this offseason, and I think the learning curve is going to take a little bit longer because of it. So I would say this with Boston. They went out, you know, they had one of the worst bullpens in baseball last year. They made that significantly better. They've also, you know, are crossing their fingers that Chris Sale is actually healthy, and he seems to be right now. So, you know, they're not going to be the offensive powerhouse they've been in the past. But I would say if you're looking for a team with a lot of upside, Boston potentially has that if everybody stays healthy. And so, you know, while I don't think either one of these teams is going to be over 500, I could see Boston being right around 500. I think Baltimore is going to slide back into the mid to upper 70s range in terms of wins. I don't think either one of these teams is going to threaten, you know, the top three teams in the AL East.
Brad, I saw a tweet today talking about Shohei Ohtani's income this year, and I believe it's upwards of $70 million with his earnings from the Angels and his off-the-field stuff. I mean, and at the end of the tweet, it was like, this guy is the face of baseball globally. Is like, you being a real good quality big league closer, is that, do you look at that and say, this guy is just like, what is that? It's unreal.
I do. You know, there's so many things that we're left wondering with Ohtani, just in terms of, you know, his potential earnings if the Angels don't come around and figure out what they're going to do, or even if they do, you know, what that means, the amount of revenue he brings for a team, what his ceiling is, which I don't even think we've hit quite yet. You know, all these various records he's going to hold, the MVPs he's going to probably have by the end of it. There's just a lot of things that are hard to understand about Ohtani right now. And I would just say this, you know, with the way he ended that World Baseball Classic, that strikeout of Mike Trout on a nasty slider, I think people realize that he is the global face of baseball. I don't know if everyone is okay with that or loves it, but it is the truth. And, you know, 97.4% of TVs in Japan were watching that last game, that last inning that Ohtani came in and closed. That means the entire country is behind this guy. And there's a lot of people in Japan. There's a lot of people in Asia that are cheering for him. And I think everyone, obviously in our country and in Canada, is just trying to see, like, you know, what he is at the end of the day capable of, A, but B, where he's going to go. Because wherever he does go, he's going to change the landscape of that franchise and the future of that franchise. And frankly, I don't know what the, you know, ceiling is in terms of what you got to pay a guy like that. But, you know, if we thought $400-500 million was a lot, he's going to blow past that, I believe. And, you know, I think a team like the Dodgers really tried to clear their salary. They didn't do a lot this offseason. Pretty much everything they did was a one-year contract. And I think they are going to be trying really hard to get Ohtani with the Dodgers. But the Padres are as well. I don't know where the Padres keep getting all this money from, but they're going to try and do it anyways. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see if he has any desire to go east. But I think the front runners right now are probably the Dodgers and the Padres.
Yeah, that's scary, man. Like you mentioned, the Padres, they're going to pay Soto, we believe. You know, they just rearranged the deal of Machado.
Maybe they don't, though, Hayes.
Maybe they don't. Wow. Maybe if you get Ohtani, maybe you let him walk. But, like, you're paying Machado now. It's going to be like a 15-year deal, effectively. For Manny, you've got Tatis Jr. You're paying. You bring in Bogarts. You're paying. Like, they're paying everybody in San Diego. They've been completely off the map and off the radar for 20 years, basically.
Yeah,
it's crazy what's going on.
It is. It's super surprising, and you know they feel like they can land Soto, but you know it makes you wonder. Like, you know, if I think the best case for the Padres.
Ooh.
Are we still on the air?
Still on the air?
I think Brad just got in his car or something. We'll see. I don't even know if we can bring Brad back. But see what's up with that, Chris, if you can. The phone drops. Are we still on the air? Well, are we still on the air?
We don't even have to call him back, do we?
Yeah, I think we're good. Yeah, we'll bring him in. We got Brad. Brad, you can finish that thought on just the money being spent out west.
Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable that the Padres have that. But if Tatis has a great year, my point there was that they can figure out if they want to trade him as well, and then I think they'll have the ability to do that. You know, depending on what they want to do with Soto and Ohtani. So, you know, the bottom line is that somehow Padres have as much money as you know, Mega City and mm-hmm. you know, including New York and L.A. Don't know how they're doing it, but they've got it.
They sure do. It seems that way anyway. He is Brad Lidge, longtime MLBer, and of course you can hear him on MLB Network Radio. It's always great catching up with you, Brad. Enjoy the start of the season. We'll do it again soon.
All right, guys. Sounds great. Thank you.
There he is, Brad Lidge. Are we still on the air?
Am I still on the air here?
Play
the whole thing, JP. Yeah, just for my fun. End of the day excitement.
Yes.
Make us smile.
Please
do. That was so fun.
he hasn't really been able to respond well from it. And then, am I still on the air here?
You could tell when he said, and then, his wires were crossing.
Yeah, that ship was sinking, man, quickly. It was a radar. Like, that was really not a good scene. Mayday.
Am I still on the air here?
Mayday. Mayday. That guy's brain was screaming mayday.
That was what, a solid two or three count?
I know, like, but guys, what continues to shock me is when he said it went silent on his end. I mean, he's the caller in. It's supposed to be silent.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what else he was looking for.
Right. Like, if we were doing a show, you know, outside of Maple Leaf Square or something, and it was really loud in the background, I could understand how that might throw you off a little bit. If all of a sudden that noise just completely disappeared, you might wonder what happened. But we were insulated in the studio. There's no background noise. There's nothing. There's no explanation for that. None.
No, it was just a meltdown.
It was a meltdown. Yep. Mayday. Mayday.
Am I still on the air here?
Today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Looking at the NHL board tonight, I think the Bruins understand. They're looking at history. They're looking for the President's Trophy, which they can secure tonight. And they got Nashville, who is wounded. And Nashville, to their credit, post-deadline has actually played pretty well. But I think the Bruins roll tonight. I think they win big by 2+. You got to pay a little bit of juice, but not much. Pittsburgh and Detroit. Detroit has been brutal recently. And Pittsburgh is actually, they're playing for something, but they've been so inconsistent all year. You get Detroit at +160, I think it's worth a sprinkle. I wouldn't be shocked if Pittsburgh stubbed their toe. Like, they're not a good enough team, they're not a consistent team to believe they're going to win every single night. Right. You're getting Detroit at +160. And the same thing with Tampa, Carolina. That should be a great game tonight. Tampa's playing +116 on FanDuel. They're going to win games. They lost in Montreal. They lost in Ottawa. They lost a really close game in Boston. Plus money for Tampa when they are up against the wall, and I think they feel like they need to make a statement, I think it's pretty good value. So I'm on Tampa tonight. Today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. We'll see. Like, Tampa, don't you think Carolina's a tough team. But Tampa's not going to lose every single night and just get blown out. Like, they're too good of a team. No, they're going to have a response at some
point.
They're due.
You're right. Like, they are due to, like, actually get their game back in order. But that Carolina team, especially on home ice, they're pretty darn good.
Pretty good.
Like that. They're tough to play against. And and kind of like what I was saying earlier, that Islander team, they're not a, you know, they're not sexy the way they play. They mirror the coach. They're just, you know, they're gritty. Mm-hmm. Like Rod the Bod, that team plays a lot like Rod the Bod played, like just hard and detailed and heavy. And, you know, Tampa's going to have their work cut out for them. That's a tough, tough building to
play. Absolutely. For sure. Yeah. Raptors Heat tonight. Jimmy Butler not going for Miami. And Gary Trent is out still for the Raptors. We'll come back and tee that up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, Kyle Lowry back tonight. He's on a minutes restriction. I got to think he plays 20 minutes tonight.
Sure.
Got to play 20 tonight. Jimmy Butler's out for Miami. This is a big opportunity for the Raps. They're favored on FanDuel, as they should be. They're at home. They've been playing better. Poeltl's been a big part of that. Miami's, you know, they're not in great form. Miami's playing for something, though. They could pass Brooklyn and get into that sixth seed. This is a big one for the Raps before they hit the road. So we look forward to that. That game can be seen on TSN tonight. We're up on TSN 2 right now. Shout out to Vintage Hockey Showcase on Twitter that found a picture of the O-Dog and Noodles battling it out.
Wow.
Battling it out.
Couple Hall of Fame players right there.
Yeah, look at that. That would have been, what, 06 maybe?
The puck's
5-0-6. Weird because how brutal was I if I shot the puck and the puck's like over your glove?
I think it
I'm only
something.
Hoping it hit your stick or your pad and it's bouncing the other way.
That's a rebound. Yeah. Look at Noodles. He's about to pounce on that and smother it. That's a rebound.
I think that's like hit my stick and I've lost my balance and it's
I wonder if I ever scored on you, Noodles.
I swear Gibby did it once or something. I don't I don't believe you did, and you only played against me a couple times, or maybe you did, and it was like once or something, but I think we would remember it, wouldn't you?
You'd think we would find that out by now. You guys have been working together for almost a decade. We have no idea.
I think, I want to say, because it's weird, like when somebody comes in, I'll always get the note. It's like, hey, this guy scored six goals in their career on you. I'm like, great, you know, get in line, you know. Like, I think you, for some reason, if I had to guess, I would say yes. But maybe not.
Probably a primary assist or two, for sure. You got to think you've been on the game sheet.
Well, even that night, that's the night that Sundin got four.
Yes. Matt, and, you had an assist in that game. That's what JP's telling me. So you got in there. You got in on that game sheet. All right, boys. Good stuff. Raptors Heat tonight on TSN. We look forward to that. The Leafs are back in action tomorrow. We'll start teeing that up tomorrow as well. It's going to be a good one. We're out of here. Thanks to everyone behind the scenes for helping out, everyone for tuning in, radio, TV, podcast, web. We appreciate it. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m. We'll chat then.